Historian David Nichols, a leading authority on the Eisenhower presidency, has written the new book, Ike and McCarthy, Dwight Eisenhower's Secret Campaign Against Joseph McCarthy. It is the first book to document, rigorously document, the extraordinary story of how Eisenhower used trusted subordinates to conduct a clandestine campaign to undercut McCarthy and permanently damage the senator's political prestige. Again, the name of the book is Ike and McCarthy. It is published by Simon & Schuster, and it's a great pleasure to welcome David Nichols to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Joe.
You have written so much about Dwight D. Eisenhower. Why did you want to focus specifically on this campaign against Joseph McCarthy?
Well, there have been two major critiques of Eisenhower during his presidency, all kind of revolving around his reluctance to use the bully pulpit. And we modern folks kind of think that that presidential leadership is so important to speak out against all kinds of issues, and certainly it is. But that was not Eisenhower's style particularly. But the two big knocks on Ike was always his failure to speak out on civil rights for African Americans, and his failure to directly take on Joe McCarthy and his demagoguery over communist subversion. And my book on civil rights was published in 2007, really reversing what we'd known about Eisenhower and civil rights, but that's another subject that we don't need to get into unless you want to. But on McCarthy, for the first time, this book reveals that Eisenhower did, in fact, have a strategy for going after Joe McCarthy. It was a clandestine operation, and for a lot of reasons had to be clandestine, and Ike thought it did. But also, Ike was not about to speak out in public against Joe McCarthy. He thought that giving him presidential attention would just reinforce his prestige. And so Ike actually refused to even use McCarthy's name in public.
And as you point out in the book, it seems that that was a great ability to never lower himself to McCarthy's level.
Absolutely. Yeah, and he just wasn't, the way he put it was, I'm not going to get in the gutter with that guy.
So Senator McCarthy first sees headlines in 1950 when he claimed to have the names of 205 communists in the State Department, and thereafter, all hell breaks loose. Eisenhower comes into this, and what did you find out about that campaign of when he started to realize that he needed to do something?
Well, I might back up for just a moment to say, of course, Joe did not have those 205 names.
A false claim.
Yeah, right. And that was typical of him. I think Eisenhower always despised McCarthy, even from afar. He kept up with events on the mainland rather well. You know, he was constantly being lobbied to run for president, and finally he did. Even Harry Truman tried to get him to run with the Democrats at one point. But so he kept up on McCarthy and what he was doing. And he made a big mistake in October of 1952 when Ike went to do a speech in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and McCarthy had accused his mentor, George Marshall, of treason, in effect. And Ike intended to insert 74 words of praise for Marshall in the speech that night with McCarthy sitting on stage. He thought he'd really stick it to McCarthy. And the Wisconsin politicians talked the general out of using those words for political reasons. And unfortunately, that had already leaked to the newspaper. And then Joe McCarthy lied and went and said he talked Eisenhower into taking it out. And that infuriated Ike. But he still didn't go after him until January of 1954. Eisenhower had a lot to pray over during 1953. The Korean War was still going on. There were, in fact, spies in the government, and he was concerned about that. The American people were still recovering from the Great Depression and World War II, and the Cold War had made everybody fearful. There was a great paranoia in the land. So he had a lot of things to do in 1953 just to get his administration organized. But by 1954, he concluded the time had come.
Of course, 1953 is when McCarthy really started to rise. He assumes the chairmanship of the Permanent Investigative Subcommittee And in that position, he holds these hearings and exposing these alleged communist infiltrators in the government, ruining the reputation of citizens and employees. So by 1954, as you mentioned, Ike is ready to go and to do this. So when we look at the downfall of McCarthy, in your opinion, when does Eisenhower's role become very clear?
Well, it doesn't become clear publicly ever. Eisenhower didn't even outline it in his memoirs. So this is behind the scenes. But the linchpin of what destroyed McCarthy in 1954 are the famous Army McCarthy hearings that were on television for 2 months. And what led to that was in Eisenhower's chief aides had a meeting in the Attorney General's office on January 21st, 1954. Let me set the background for that for a moment, if I could, Joe.
Absolutely.
McCarthy was, as you indicated, really riding high. That's Ike's words for it in his memoirs in January 54. He had a rating in the Gallup poll of 50% positive, 29% negative. He was really effectively the most prestigious politician in the country in January 1954. So on January 21st, these advisors meet, and John Adams, the Army Council for the United States Army, informed them about all the privileges that Roy Cohn, backed up sometimes by McCarthy, had sought for a private in the Army, G. David Shine. Now, Roy Cohn was McCarthy's chief counsel for his investigative subcommittee, a 25-year-old legal prodigy. And his boyfriend was G. David Shine, this handsome New Yorker that he talked McCarthy into adding to his staff as an unpaid chief consultant, whatever that meant. But in July 1953, Dave Shine got his draft notice. And through the following months, Cohn harassed the Army, and I mean harassed is a mild word, obscenely quite often, to try to get a special assignment for Shine so he could stay with the committee and, more important to him, to stay with him. And he harassed them in all kinds of ways. Just one colorful example is he'd press them, and he did succeed sometimes, in getting Shine off on weekends and nights to do what they euphemistically called committee business at a nearby hotel. And I have to say to you, that let's back up for a moment. The 1950s was a horrendously homophobic period. And so it's not easy to talk to a modern audience about the atmosphere then. Just the rumor that someone was gay, not the fact, could cost them their job. So it's in that context that this lover scandal comes about. But it is the thing that nobody ever talks about openly. But to make a long story short, Fred Seaton in the Defense Department on Eisenhower's orders pulls together a report from what John Adams had told them, and that report gets published on March 11, 1954. It causes a firestorm of controversy, which leads to the Army-McCarthy hearings and therefore to McCarthy's demise.
Does McCarthy ever know that Roy Cohn is homosexual?
Oh, I'm sure he does. That's a little obscure. I don't have documentary evidence on that. Indeed, there were rumors about Joe himself.
Right.
I'm not sure those have ever been validated. I don't think there's any doubt but what Roy Cohn was. He died of AIDS in 1986. It's a curious thing. Cohn, you know, went back to New York to resume his law practice after McCarthy fell from grace. And became known as one of the most ruthless attorneys in New York, including 13 years of service to one Donald Trump. But he died of AIDS in 1986, but never came out of the closet. And yet it was well known that he was gay. As for Dave Shine, one of the complicated things is that Shine, a couple of years later, married a Miss Universe candidate and had 6 children. And that confuses people sometimes, but some folks are bisexual. And in those days, gay men and sometimes women got married anyway.
So you talk about in the book how one of the real turning points is in February of 1954 when Joe McCarthy charges General Ralph Zwicker, who is a hero of World War II, and says that he is not fit to wear the uniform. This is an attack that obviously prompts Eisenhower, who's a five-star general after all, to take action against McCarthy. Was that simply the straw that broke the camel's back?
It appears to be in some regards, but actually this January 21st meeting I was talking about, that what you're talking about happened on February 18th. And so really it was the month prior that they'd already started the wheels in motion on this. But it did incense Eisenhower, who was on vacation in California. And it further made him angry because he came home that day to find out that Robert Stevens, the Navy Secretary, had made a secret agreement with Joe McCarthy that the papers all called a surrender, and they assumed that Eisenhower ordered Stevens to do that. That's a complicated story I don't think we need to get into now.
Right.
But this report was already in the works by February 18th. But you know, the big picture is McCarthy starts his hearings on communists in the Army in August of 53. And I really believe he, in effect, signed his own political death warrant when he did that, noting, as you just said, with a five-star Army general in the White House. I mean, that's really in your face. And I believe that McCarthy wanted to run for president. He's on record several times saying McCarthy has, quote, the bug to run for president. And if I have anything to do with it, he'll never get the chance. And so Ike, I think, was already thinking about 1956, although he refuses to admit that.
You mentioned a moment ago the connection between Roy Cohn and Donald Trump, the president of the United States. You also, I'm curious because Joe McCarthy has often been compared to Donald Trump, although I would think, in looking at your story, there are also obvious differences as well.
Well, there are. McCarthy was focused on communists. Trump's focused, among other things, on terrorists. Certainly, they're different people from a different time, although some of their methods are remarkably similar. But I don't pretend to be expert on that. You know, I do know what I'm talking about with the 1953-54 period. I lapse over into punditry with the rest of it. But certainly, both exploited people's fears, provided scapegoats for people's problems, would do most anything for a headline. And sometimes, the most outrageous charge, the better.
And the truth did not matter much, or does not matter much, to either.
No, and tell a big lie and stick to it. And so how much Cohn passed of that on, certainly when Trump first consulted with Cohn in 1973, the United States government was suing him and his father for discrimination in their housing. And they consulted with Roy Cohn about it, and Cohn said, tell him to go to hell and take him to court. That was Cohn's approach to most everything.
When you look at this story, what do you believe that we can learn about leadership, especially presidential leadership, when it comes to Eisenhower's approach to McCarthy and this secret campaign against him?
Well, that's a most thoughtful question on your part. It's a great question because we don't want our presidents to be too secretive. And Eisenhower clearly was. And yet he believed that if he came out publicly, not only would it enhance Joe McCarthy's prestige, but that it would make him the president, the issue, instead of McCarthy, and possibly let him off the hook. So there are times when presidents have to be strategic and deceptive and cannot let the public in on everything they're doing. Having said that, Eisenhower doesn't get the best grades on being a good public educator, I suppose. But you know, in terms of the rating of presidencies, you know, Eisenhower used to be rated near the bottom of presidents. The most recent poll was with C-SPAN of 191 historians rates him now number 5, just behind Lincoln, Washington, and the Roosevelts. So we have changed our view of Dwight Eisenhower. Presidents have to hold their cards close to their vest sometimes, and they can't just spout off about everything they're doing. And on the other hand, they need not to lie to the American public, and certainly Dwight Eisenhower bent over backwards not to do that.
The book is fascinating. It's entitled Ike and McCarthy, Dwight Eisenhower's Secret Campaign Against Joseph McCarthy. It is published by Simon & Schuster. David Nichols, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's my honor, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Ike and McCarthy. David Nichols is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.